Hey now, welcome to the City Off Campus with your two favorite hosts, Sammy Sommerfeld and Jack McFarland. We've got a special guest today. We've got former Minnesota Vikings Chief Marketing Officer and fellow Iowa Hawkeye, Steve LaCroix, on the podcast. So Steve, my first question for you is, what was your experience as an Iowa student like, and what did you enjoy about being an Iowa Hawkeye?
That was great. I mean, Iowa City is awesome. You know, I grew up in Peoria, Illinois, so just a couple hours across the border, and it was a long time ago, graduated in 1990, but it was a great 4 years on campus, and met my wife there. She's from Des Moines, and we have two kids that are both Hawkeye grads, so we're a full Hawkeye family living in the Twin Cities and enjoying it.
That's awesome. So how did going to Iowa help you in your career path in sports business, and why did you want to go into the sports industry?
Yeah, it took me a little while to figure that out. I actually went to Iowa as part of the engineering program, and that didn't go so well. After a year and a half, I finally figured out it wasn't my calling, so I switched over to the business school. And right about that time, there were just a handful of graduate programs that had sport management masters. And fortunately, Western Illinois University, which is right between Iowa City and my hometown of Peoria, was one of the programs, and I was able to get in on that and really focus more so on and sports as a specialty, and then was fortunate enough to land with the Indiana Pacers as my first internship, which led to 10 years there and now 20 years at the Vikings.
So how does a kid from college get an internship with the Pacers and then find a career with the Pacers? Like I never really think a lot of people see that coming, and I really don't think a lot of people, once they're in that position, look forward and see that 10 years with the Pacers. Did you see yourself really sticking with that organization and in the sports industry at that point, or was it just something you were happy to be a part of?
Well, certainly happy to be part of it. I wore my wife Sue, and she's a retired pediatric nurse, you know, very stable, noble profession. And I'm like, hey, we're gonna have to move around a lot. We're getting into professional sports. And first I had to convince her that pro sports was an actual job, you know, as far as the way to make a living. And we actually visited with the Pacers as well as other teams in the Indianapolis market, as well as Chicago market, on kind of a barnstorming tour with some other students, and something just clicked. It was a great few hours with the Pacers and just pursued them for an internship. I was fortunate enough to be one of six interns for the summer ticket sales program, and then was lucky that they had some openings at the right time. They had not had any new hires in ticketing in several years, and just, you know, a little bit of dumb luck on timing. But once I got in there, I was like, hey, this is what I want to do for a career, and worked hard at it and learned how to sell, learned how to take rejection. Back then it was a lot of cold calling on the phone with paper lead lists, and every once in a while somebody may call you back, and you just had to kind of learn on the fly and try to get them excited about Pacers basketball and spending their hard-earned money on tickets.
How were you able to make yourself stand out in those early years and let your hard work speak for itself and be noticed within the Pacer organization? And how were you able to work your way up into an eventual position with the Minnesota Vikings?
Yeah, I mean, it was a lot of hard work. I mean, you had to prove yourself and close deals. So you had, you know, anytime you get hired for a sales position, you have to build to create revenue and add on your sales totals, and just worked hard, you know, networked within the front office, tried to learn about other departments. I didn't want to necessarily do ticketing for my full career, but it was a great entry point into the industry, and really respect those that do that for a living. It's hard work, and it's convincing people to give up their valuable time to come to games, especially in baseball where there's 81 home games. Obviously NFL, we have 8 regular season games and 2 preseason games, and potentially next year, 9 home games, depending on how the rotation works with the 17 game season. Just worked hard and was able to convert over to sponsorship sales, and then was involved with our new arena in the late 90s and led all the main partnerships on that, and then was managing the department of sponsorship sales when the Vikings came calling, and took a little bit of a risk to move to Minnesota, still Midwest, but upper Midwest. And we do have some family up here, so that was a nice transition. And really just 20 years flew by, and took us a long time to get that new stadium approved. We finally opened in 2016. It's ownership group that hired me initially and then sold the team a handful of years later. So made it through that transition and just had a great run of building a stadium, hosting a Super Bowl, opening a new practice facility on a 200-acre campus. So it was a real exciting and fulfilling journey over those 20 years.
One thing I wanted to touch on specifically with that stadium project that the Minnesota Vikings had, what were some unique challenges that you and your team had faced when transitioning all of the game day activities from one stadium to the Minnesota campus and then back? Like for those, what was it, 2014 and 15, was it? Like what were some unique challenges that you never really expected to face when you did that, you undertook that project?
Well, the weather for one. I mean, we had a fan base that, you know, a good chunk of our fan base had never been to, you know, outdoor football games for the Vikings, unless they were going back in the day at the Met, which is now, you know, Mall of America, as far as that site goes. And so it was a educating our fan base on, you know, how to get to the campus, where to park. I mean, it was a two years there, as you mentioned, you know, 14 and 15, knowing that the end prize was 16 in at US Bank Stadium in a new world-class facility was motivating for sure. You know, some of those games, that last playoff game against Seattle was incredibly cold. And so it was an interesting situation. We played there once before when the roof collapsed, the Metrodome roof collapsed. Oh, yeah. So we ended up having, I think it was three home games in 16 days in three locations, including Detroit. And so it was crazy as far as, you know, the time was flying by, but it's almost like we had the games, but our focus from a business perspective was obviously having a great fan experience and, you know, making sure that we did things right, but also full focus on 2016 and opening the building, which we only get to do really once every 30 years or so. And so that was a really special time.
And you just alluded to something that I grew up remembering, and now you just brought back an awesome memory. For a fan to see that ceiling, that roof collapse, was it'd be tough to say it isn't kind of cool looking, but from business perspective, like what went through the organization's head when that happened?
Oh boy, you know, woke up early on game day and it had collapsed, you know, kind of, I think early morning hours. Fox actually turned on a camera on Saturday because they saw a little bit of residue coming down. So kudos to them for getting the footage, and luckily no one was hurt. And it was just it was a crazy time. It was, you know, full emergency mode within the organization to figure out, okay, I think the Giants who were playing were stuck in Kansas City, waiting to see where we're going to play the game. We ended up moving to Detroit, very last minute, opening up, you know, no ticket sales, just come on in as a NFL fan based in Detroit to see an NFL game. And so that was a absolute whirlwind, 24 to 48 hours. And certainly, I'd like to say a chapter in the book someday of just a really unique experience. And that ultimately led to, I guess, us building US Bank Stadium on the Metrodome site, having to sacrifice and play those 2 years at the U of M, part of the journey.
So you talked about building US Bank Stadium and the Performance Center too. What was the experience like building those? Like from a business standpoint, how like far back do you have to start planning these facilities? And does the team success have any impact in a team's ability to actually build these type of facilities out?
Well, I would say team success never hurts any part of the business, whether that's stadiums or bottom line revenues or ticket sales. I mean, winning always helps the business part of the organization. Now it's a several year planning process. We have been trying to get a stadium, you know, ever since, you know, Red McCombs bought the team in 1998. He had visions of building up in the northern suburbs of Blaine. When the Wilf family bought the team, there was other locations, suburban related, and eventually we landed on the Metrodome site. So it's the largest private public construction project in Minnesota history. So obviously the public had a key financial stake, and at the end of the day, the state owns the building. There's a third party that operates it, and the Vikings are the main tenant, as well as all the other events that go on there, not necessarily in 2020, but hopefully back in 2021, that the full concert touring business and related are back on board.
So I'm from Florida, and, you know, back in 2010, 2012, the Miami Marlins built a publicly funded stadium, and there was a lot of public pressure on them, especially when they made some moves player-wise and the team wasn't performing well. What type of pressure did you face from a public standpoint, knowing that there was public dollars being spent. Was there any, or was it more just everybody was all for it because Minnesota loves their football?
Well, they certainly love their football and love their Vikings, which is great. But at the end of the day, I mean, the public interest had to be protected. I mean, this is a multi-use facility. This is not just a Vikings stadium. And really, at the end of the day, we had to design it so that, you know, baseball could be played at the high school and college level, to obviously a world-class concert venue, to all the other events that go on in the clubs and public spaces. And so it was definitely a balance between public and private. And I think we landed in a really good spot that I like to say is kind of a win-win for everybody involved.
So in 2013, one of the first things that you kind of helped change, I guess you could say, for the Minnesota Vikings was you kind of like a, not like a rebranding, but you redesigned the jerseys, and there was an enhanced Norseman logo. What was the process of getting that completed? And then what was the reception that the organization was trying to receive from the public? And what was that reception at first?
Yeah, it was definitely a logo enhancement, not a logo change. I mean, the Norseman has been our mark since 1961, when the Vikings organization was established. It's very unique and iconic. And so we wanted to honor that. But when it was designed, that was done before digital media and high def and 4K and, you know, all the different technology platforms and social platforms. And so we wanted to be able to bring that Norseman to life a little bit more so in today's current element, even more so now versus back, you know, a handful of years ago. And so I think we landed in a good spot. I mean, fans, we didn't announce this major logo change. Again, it was an enhancement, and everything was very positive. Our uniforms, you know, we wanted to you know, modernize those a bit and make those reflecting of our historical look, but with a little bit of a clean, modern edge. So Nike was obviously very involved with that. And the league marketing department was also very supportive of us as we did our brand study and really tried to better understand our brand and what it meant and what it resonated with our fan base. And so far, so good.
Could you take me through that brand study? Because for one of my classes this year, my business support communication class, we took a look at Georgia's brand study that they did throughout the 2000s. And they had they try to make their brand and everything more universally recognizable. And they talked about all the way down to the font, to the lettering, to just the way the G looks. Like what goes into that type of meeting and discussion?
Well, it's a long process. I mean, it's obviously a lot of stakeholders, a lot of fan surveying, focus groups, a lot of experts that know brands. You've got Nike involved. You've got the NFL league office. You have the Vikings marketing group as well. So we really tried to collaborate, you know, drive the process, obviously leverage their expertise and resources. And obviously Nike can create some awesome uniforms, but we still wanted to keep the integrity to our history without going too far removed from it. And then we created the unique, you know, Vikings font that you see on the back with the nameplate, and how some of the letters and numbers really kind of seamlessly fit together. And we thought it was just a really cool look with an edge, but not too much of an edge where we may take it too far.
With your time with the Vikings, with being responsible for the branding and marketing of the franchise, did you see a specific aspect of the team's brand grow from the time you took over to the time you recently wrapped up with the Vikings? Did you see a certain aspect of fan engagement or, you know, fan loyalty to the brand or social media following? Like, was there a specific area where you saw the brand really increase?
Yeah, I would say that would be through our Vikings Entertainment Network, which is really an in-house broadcasting company. And that's all of our production and content, all of our social platforms. When I first took the job, obviously, you know, social media, you know, was not social media as it is today. And all those things kind of happened over time. And so we really tried to, you know, make sure that we leverage that properly, create the kind of content that our fan base wants to consume. You have to speak differently on each platform. To our fan base, you know, some fans are into Instagram versus Facebook versus Snapchat, whatever the example may be. And so we really tried to build a robust content production team and control our own content, create it, have as unique content as possible. The fact that VEN is based in our headquarters building, right down the, literally on the same level as the player's wing. I mean, it can be very interactive, respectful, but interactive of making sure the players know that we are not an outside broadcasting company. We are one of the family. So how can we help you, player, with your respective brand? Obviously player brands have become a lot bigger over recent years, and they have their own platforms. And so, you know, how can we partner together, reflect well for you as your personal player, as well as the organization, you know, Vikings brand. So I think that was really the main growth. And then obviously with US Bank Stadium in 2016, we started a number of new traditions, including the Skol chant, which has really been incredibly popular and successful. And I think something that'll stay for the duration of the franchise into the future.
Where did that come from, the Skol chant? I think I saw it my first time. It was a European country. They had just come back from a soccer tournament, and they had all, it was like a reception almost. It was in, I think, Iceland or something.
Yep.
Is that right?
Yeah.
All right, good.
You did your research. Yeah, Icelandic national team. So they, we wanted to make sure that they gave us approval with their blessing that we do our version of it. So we approached them. They're very accommodating. They actually engaged quite a bit on it. And then off to the races. Once we had that first game and we launched it and people started to get the feel for what this tradition means and how the rhythm of it goes. And we didn't want to overuse it in games, but then use it at the right times to fire up the crowd. And so I think we've really landed in a good spot again, as far as utilizing that at the right times in the right places. And now it's fans doing it on their own. And it's fun to see fans creating their own content around the Skol chant and with the Minneapolis Miracle and you know, what that meant to our fan base. And so we've had a lot of fun with it. And so I think that'll certainly continue to grow and expand in the future years past my tenure.
What were some other stadium innovations that you had a hand in with US Bank Stadium? I know one thing was the smaller suites I've seen when marketing to the fan base about giving that more intimate experience where they could be with smaller groups of people. What were some of the other things that were carefully thought through when building the stadium?
Yeah, there's quite a few things. We have the turf suites, the field suites, which are literally on the level of the field. So your patio is the same turf that the players are playing on. And so that was a really cool aspect for those that want that type of experience. It's not for every fan to be down low because your sight lines maybe aren't the best to see the action on the field, but you are right there, especially if you're in the corner. We have the world's biggest pivoting doors, so we can open those up and get the airflow, the clear ETFE roof. So on a day when it's 10 below in Minnesota for a December game or January playoff game, you can have that building enclosed, but on TV, if it's sunny out, it looks like you're playing outdoors. And so there's a number of things. Our Club Purple with our lounge suites that are actually couches. So you're sitting on an L-shaped couch for the game, kind of having a totally different experience and sitting in the seats. And so we really tried to create some unique seating areas, did a lot of research to see what fans were looking for. Obviously, I looked at other stadiums and arenas and what other teams had done in recent builds, what worked, what didn't work. But at the end of the day, we wanted it to be, when you turn on Vikings television or a game on television, you know exactly that's US Bank Stadium. And then when you come to a game, it's unique versus any other NFL experience in the league.
Yeah. So when US Bank Stadium hosted the Super Bowl, what was that experience like for you from a planning period? I see you have a Super Bowl helmet in the background. Yep. And what was it like working with the NFL, working with Super Bowl sponsors? Justin Timberlake performed the Prince halftime show with the purple lighting up the city. So what was that whole experience like for you?
Yeah, it was awesome. I mean, it was a ton of work. It was, to be honest, bittersweet because we lost the 2 weeks before to Philly in the NFC Championship game. We thought we could be the first NFL team to play a home Super Bowl. And so that was, on game day was a little awkward as we walked into our home building with, the NFL branding and not the Vikings branding like we normally have on game day. So, but it was still special to be able to host. The community really rallied around and embraced the opportunity. We embraced the cold. We knew it was going to be cold. The biggest, we used to say Armageddon would be if it was a warm streak that week. or weeks leading into, because everything was planned for outdoors and, you know, the kind of the frozen activities and you know, Nicollet Mall in downtown Minneapolis was definitely rocking. And you know, game day was great as far as, you know, how it all came off. The league was fantastic to deal with. We have some conflicting sponsors, so we had to work out, you know, how that worked. We do have some corporate partners that are similar, so that was the easy part of it. But that happens in every NFL city where, you know, you're not always going to be in sync with league branded partners and team branded partners. So you just have to find, you know, what's the right spot that everybody can live with. And you know, it's once every, I think the previous game was in 1992. So those games don't come around very often. So at least in Minnesota, they don't. So we wanted to make sure that we enjoyed the couple weeks leading into it. The week of was, it flew by, you know, in hindsight, I would do things differently as far as, you know, planning your schedule. It was, you know, kind of tough to get around town like it is with every, you know, NFL city on Super Bowl week. And so, you know, downtown Minneapolis was definitely a spot to be.
Was downtown Minneapolis a spot to be? Was it more of a spot to be after the Miracle or during the Super Bowl?
Well, the Miracle, I mean, that's anybody that is a Vikings fan or was in that building on game day, other than the Saints fans or the Saints team, I mean, that's a career highlight to have that kind of thing happen to take you to the NFC Championship game. The emotional roller coaster of any NFL game, especially playoffs, is always pretty intense. And when you watch that game back and the lead changes in the last couple minutes, you kind of forget at the time what happened. Like, oh my gosh, this thing was back and forth and back and forth. And it's a really special time for all of our staff to celebrate after. And then you know, very quickly, the team had to get focused on Philly. When the media wanted to talk about what happened this past Sunday with the Miracle, the football team was trying to get their focus ahead to the following weekend in Philly. And so that's always, you know, a balance for the football team and operations.
So in 2019, you were named the Innovator of the Year by Ticketmaster for your adoption and vision to completely digital ticketing. Where did that change and vision for you come from? And is it somehow rooted in your days and how you started your journey in with the Pacers?
Yeah, I mean, really, you know, the Vikings organization was named Innovator, and we fully, you know, Ticketmaster is a great partner. They have been for many, many years. We fully embraced mobile ticketing as we led into 2016 and our first season at US Bank Stadium. And our fan base bought into it. There's a lot of education. We had to make sure that when we built US Bank Stadium, that the right infrastructure from a connectivity, the Wi-Fi system, the DAS system, you know, making sure that your phone was fully capable. In mobile ticketing, we've been the leader as far as the percentage of fans using mobile ticketing. It's really down to everybody except maybe a few that don't have a smartphone. Believe it or not, there's some out there. And so it's really more so an education standpoint. And, you know, back in my Pacers days, it was different. It was paper stock tickets you would send out to your season ticket base. You weren't really sure who was going to be in stadium on game day. Now with mobile ticketing, it's much better for the fan to forward and transfer tickets, not worry about losing their ticket. And then at the end of the day, as they become part of our database and engage with the Vikings app, we can start to, you know, build more content and connectivity around who those fans are. And frankly, just who's in the building on game day is a huge benefit for teams now versus we knew who our season ticket base was. But at the end of the day, multiple months later, when you're playing the Packers in December, you have really no idea who was using that hard stock paper ticket. So it's definitely, it was time for you know, teams to move to that. And we were in the era where we could have the technology and backbone behind it to make sure it works. And obviously it doesn't work when you weak Wi-Fi or your mobile phone, because there's no DAS antennas for the cellular players. And so we nailed that as far as, you know, putting the right investments into that and didn't compromise that at all.
Over your tenure with the Vikings, did you ever see a change in your season ticket holder demographics? Was there ever a change over the 20 years of fans, you know, age range or, you know, types of people that were going to the games? Were there ever significant changes, or has it always kind of been a steady baseline demographic?
I'd say it's a little bit of both. You have your traditional fan base that were there back, back in the old Met Stadium days to Metrodome, before my time in 1998 when Randy Moss hit the scene as a rookie, their 15-1 season. That was a definitely a growth in the fan base to a younger fan base, maybe first time Vikings season ticket owners. And then I think the next change came when we went into our new stadium and we now have, clubs that are all inclusive that are on the 50-yard line, stacked up. We tried to create as many first rows as possible with multiple levels versus just two concourses like the Metrodome had. Bring those sight lines in as tight as possible, not have the biggest video boards in the league, but have the best clarity and the best aspect ratio and best viewing angles to really be able to be impactful, but not a distraction to the fans on game day. And so I think over time, there were a couple, the 98 team was certainly evolution from our fan base. And then 2016 was as well.
What was it like when Brett Favre came to the Vikings? From a marketing perspective,
it was fun to go to bed at night and wake up the next morning and find out how many tickets you sold overnight online was crazy. So the media frenzy, very unusual to have a border battle, type of thing where one guy switches teams to the other border battle team. And it was interesting. There's a lot of Packers fans in the Twin Cities. There's a lot of families that are split between Vikings and Packers based on where they grew up. And so it made for some interesting times for sure. I think, some Packers fans weren't sure if they were supposed to like the Vikings now, still like Brett Favre, not like Brett Favre, still hate the Vikings. So it was a mixed bag, but we definitely had a lot of fun. And there's some great early wins that season, very close last second type things. And then obviously the heartbreak in New Orleans in overtime. Was a tough one. That was a long plane ride back.
Now that your time is over with the Vikings and you look in hindsight, you touched on a couple of moments, games, but what for you personally was the most rewarding moment during those 20 years?
Well, it's hard to put it on one moment. I mean, there's the on the field highlights when you win or, have some type, Minneapolis Miracle is one of several examples. I mean, that kind of experience and adrenaline rush is hard to replicate. To building a team that is best in class in so many ways across the sales and marketing departments and to see people have success. We are a very steady organization, great fan base, super proud of US Bank Stadium and what that means from a fan experience and the revenues that we generated obviously are key to the bottom line that drive, other parts of the business and can impact, football investments and those kind of things. To then hosting the Super Bowl to, opening up a TCO Performance Center in Eagan. It's hard to put it on just one thing. So it's really a journey of many things that is fun to be part of and proud to be part of.
What is the toughest aspect in working in the sports industry, in your opinion? And what do you enjoy most about working in the sports industry?
Well, the sports industry, it's at the end of the day, you can't really, if you're on the business side of the organization, you can't truly impact what happens on between those white lines on game day across any sport. Yeah, your fans can be an advantage if you can get your fans to be louder and prompted, that can, help the team on the field. That certainly is key, but you can't necessarily, block that punt or return that kick for a touchdown kind of thing. So I think Mondays in the NFL after a loss are tough. It's tough on the whole organization. You only have, 16, soon to be 17 home total games, half of those being at home. And so it takes a little time to kind of shake off the regret from the loss. Whereas in baseball, obviously you're playing multiple games over multiple nights and in home stands and those kind of things. Not saying that a loss is any less to them, but it's just less maybe impactful to the overall record. The best part of it is it's a great industry. It's growing. Obviously people care about our brands. They're passionate about it. I say all the time, your enemy from a front office is apathy. You want your fan base excited or anxious or maybe upset that you didn't draft the right guy in the third round, but at the end of the day, it pans out. And so different things, you know, the emotion is there, both working for the team as well as those associated with the team. And it's a lot of fun. I mean, we're in the entertainment business. We have to remind ourselves sometimes that we're in entertainment, and this is a key part of a lot of people's lives. And obviously, like I said earlier, you know, winning is always good and fun, but it doesn't, you're not going to win them all. That's for sure.
If you could go back and tell 21-year-old Steve LaCroix something after all these years you've had, what would you tell him?
It's I say this all the time, and it sounds kind of quirky, but I wish I would have kept journals, like written everything down over the, you know, the stories and the experiences, and everything's, you know, up here, you know, some's on paper. But I just think that, you know, over 30 years and at the Pacers, we were playoffs 9 out of 10 years, NBA finals once, and playing Kobe and Shaq in LA, and just, you know, the experience of various road trips over the years and corporate partner trips, and was able to visit every NFL venue over the years. And so it, you kind of have your favorite parts about certain buildings and other. You can't afford every best practice when you build a building because you run out of money. And so it's not like, it's like building a house. You can't opt in on every upgrade and option. But no, I would say it maybe as surprising as that sounds, is just wish I would have, you know, documented things more so over time. So for those getting into the business, just maybe that's a little tip to, I've never been a journaler or you know, diary guy, but you know, just kind of keep things a little bit more organized so you could reflect back on paper versus, you know, just kind of in your head as far as from the memories.
So to take a chance for you to reflect, what is your favorite non-Vikings venue that you've ever attended or just been to, whether it's during a sporting event for the Vikings or just completely detached from your responsibilities?
Definitely Augusta. I mean, I've been fortunate enough to have been there a handful of times, and it's a special, magical place. And, you know, it's, you know, was able to take my son Alex there and then take him to the NCAA basketball championship the following night. And so it's just one of those where, you know, Augusta is a magical place. Went to many Indy 500s over my 10 years and with the Pacers. That's a special weekend and a special race day. You know, MLB All-Star games, you know, just the last 19 Super Bowls, the streak will end this year. So I've been to the last 19 Super Bowl weekends, and you know, each city has a different personality, each building has its own personality. And so I was able to do a lot of really cool things that I hope to continue to do in the future.
What was your favorite, well, going off of that then, what was your favorite Super Bowl you've been to in the last 19 years?
None of them, because we weren't in it. We didn't win. No, I mean, every weekend's different. You know, there's, whether it's the game experience, where you sat that game, you know, what parties you went to. Obviously, Super Bowl week and weekend is all about the various corporate and celebrity parties. And so, you know, I learned along the way that you don't need to go to every party. And it's just like you really find the right ways that you can be there representing the Vikings network. It's a time when the industry, the all the partners, really, you know, collide into one city. So it can be a really efficient time over the course of those days to get business done, or at least lay the groundwork for business. And so that's something certainly great about it. And another event I didn't mention is Kentucky Derby. That's another
That's cool.
Bucket list wise, for those that haven't been, is a fun time too.
So I have two final questions for you. So one of my questions is, I saw you were involved with the Nashville MLS expansion team. What was it like working with an expansion franchise? Because there are so few opportunities to ever do that.
Yeah, I mean, that was unique for me and for the leadership team of the Vikings. You know, we had just in recent years obviously built and opened our new stadium. The Wilf family is part of the ownership group. And so we wanted to make sure that we were there to assist the Ingram family and the majority ownership group to get off to the right start, you know, lean on us for lessons learned. You know, eventually they brought in Ian Ayer, their CEO, and he built a team and they've broken ground at the fairgrounds of Nashville, and Nashville is one of the best city in the country, in my opinion, as far as, so we wanted them to be successful in a league that continues to be successful in a city that continues to grow. And that was a lot of fun to be part of that, to be the consulting mindset at the table was something that I really enjoyed and hope to do more in the future.
That's awesome. So my final question before Jack closes the podcast out is, what is advice you'd give to Iowa students who want to either break into the sports business, whether it's sales marketing side or on the journalism content creation side?
Yeah, I would say, you know, study the industry, do your homework. You know, that sounds easy. Create a robust network. Our sports industry has become very specialized. And so in the past, it used to be you're in marketing and you kind of do a little bit of everything. Now it's become very specialized. There's a lot of online resources that are free. That's just, you know, again, do your homework as you interact with those in the sports industry. Try to get some real life experience on campus with whether it's athletic department, back in your hometown with the major or minor league team or smaller college, and just kind of learn the ins and outs of events and in the sports industry and see what really clicks and whatever your passion is, just chase that and go for it versus trying to be a generalist, you know, maybe to get in the business, be a specialist, and then over time you can grow within the industry and oversee multiple areas.
I have one final question. It has to do with being a part of like change and being a part of like or taking advantage of the passion you have. And one of the things that I'm really passionate about with sports is the ability for sports to be a platform for whatever topic to be discussed. This past summer, the passing of George Floyd was a really touching story for the entire nation, and it happened only 3 miles away from the stadium. And the Vikings were one of the first organizations to really take a forefront stance to this story. And they, I'm pretty sure they donated $5 million to social justice causes, and as well as they created the George Floyd Scholarship. So what does it mean to an organization to take such take a stance and be in front of that story and to be a leader for their fans in the community to look to, because in that situation, I really feel like a lot of the nation didn't know what to think. And the Vikings were one of the first to act and act as a leader.
Yeah. I mean, it's something where we had already set up a social justice committee with players and coaches and some front office leaders. So it wasn't like we had to ramp up and get a group together. Luckily, things were already established and in motion. Our players felt very passionate about you know, making sure that we use the Vikings platform to raise more to the issues and take a stand. And so it was something where the whole organization, from players to coaches to front office to ownership, all came together to try to make a difference and bring light to societal issues and certainly. Hopefully is something where, you know, it was helpful to whatever way that we can make it helpful. And obviously other teams had other issues in their respective cities or other ways that they wanted to handle it. But I think the Vikings did an excellent job at the time in a very trying time to do the right thing and make an impact.
Sam, do you have any other questions?
No. He answered everything I had, and thank you so much for taking the time. I mean, a lot of Iowa students were excited to hear this podcast, seeing someone who got to be a part of two really, you know, well-established sports organizations. I've had friends in the sports rec program, friends in the journalism program, friends who are engineers who are all excited to hear this podcast. So I really appreciate you taking the time.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate the opportunity. All the best in 21, and go Hawks.
Yeah, go Hawks.
Or stay safe, and to all of our listeners, you know the drill, not the same time, same place. We will see you guys later.